This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. It's April 9th, Thursday. Happy to have you. After the news, we'll hear interviews on telemedicine from both a doctor and a lawyer's perspectives. 1 in 8 Americans report knowing someone who has tested positive for coronavirus, according to a new Axios Ipsos Coronavirus Index poll. That's up from last week. The survey also found 45% of Americans are working remotely and 55% are self-quarantining. The poll is conducted weekly. What can we learn from China's handling of the COVID-19 outbreak? Radio MD's Bill Klaproth has a few takeaways we can use for our crisis in the States.
The first confirmed case of COVID-19 in the United States was reported on January 20th, 2020. 3 days later, on January 23rd, Chinese authorities implemented a strict nationwide travel ban, giving other cities enough time to prepare for the eventual arrival of COVID-19. Now, a new report from the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom suggests that the travel ban and other measures, such as what we're doing right now in America, may have prevented more than 700,000 cases in China. Much will be learned and written about this pandemic as each country's emergency response plan and speed of preventative measures will be analyzed. One thing is clear, though: control measures that successfully break the chain of transmission is key. So stay home, stay safe, and happy social distancing. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
As much as social distancing and staying home has been drilled into our heads, there are still some things you have to leave the house for. Getting groceries, for example. I know I've been dreading my trips to the grocery store lately. So what can you do once you make it back home to keep any germs outside of your house? Radio MD's Scott Webb has a few tips.
We've all heard that washing our hands for 20 seconds with warm water can help slow the spread of COVID-19, but what about our clothes? According to the CDC, if nobody in our homes has tested positive, we should just wash our clothes as we normally do. That said, it's better to be safe than sorry if you've been out in public, especially if people haven't been respecting the social distancing guidelines. Though more research is needed to determine if the virus can even live in our clothing, it is recommended by some that we remove our clothing when we return home and wash them immediately in the warmest water possible for those fabrics. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
And if you're a skier or a snowboarder with some extra gear laying around, this story is for you. Goggles for Docs are collecting used ski goggles to donate to doctors in need of more protective gear. You can find out more at gogglesfordocs.com. That's goggles, FORDOCS.com. In-person healthcare is more important than ever, but to alleviate some of the burden on physical emergency rooms and urgent care centers, telemedicine is adapting as a more useful alternative during the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Neil Parikh is the senior medical director at Oscar Health in New York City and tells us about some of those changes.
How is telemedicine being used to reduce the burden on doctors and emergency rooms during this time?
Telemedicine is being used in a variety of ways. I think one of the first things to sort of recognize, if you take a step back, maybe the first time in the country's history, therefore maybe potentially even just sort of the world history, where telemedicine was called to be the first line of defense in a public health crisis. And, you know, a lot of that for obvious reasons in terms of trying to mitigate the risk of the contagion. But over the course of the last 3 weeks, we've also seen it evolve in both its capabilities and its responsibilities in this response. So I think at the outset of the response, telemedicine was largely embedded into kind of a screening mechanism to help guide members through what the symptoms and what the exposures may have been and how those equate into the risk of potentially having contracted COVID, translating that risk into guiding people for testing if indicated. And now over the course of these past 3 weeks, it has really sort of shifted into this area of how can it absorb more and more of the healthcare delivery system in order to free up our other frontline folks in the ERs and the hospitals to be able to focus on the sickest and most acute patients. And I do think probably you're going to see the next phase of the evolution on how can it start to absorb the gaps that we're starting to see in outpatient and primary care medicine, because providers have had to close their doors and potentially jump into other healthcare settings as part of this response.
So how do you see telemedicine changing during this pandemic? How is your team adapting in real time to using this more?
So this is an interesting question, because the way I'm sort of going to frame it is kind of both from an Oscar perspective and from a little bit more of a global perspective. From the Oscar side of things, in a lot of ways, both from a tech capacity standpoint and a human capital standpoint, we were really built and well positioned to jump into this response in a timely way. Telemedicine has been one of our core offerings ever since the outset of the company, and it has only grown in both the depth and breadth of services that it could provide over the past 7-8 years. So when COVID came around, we immediately had both a team of providers and a core engagement infrastructure that could help bring members into our telemedicine experience, and then certainly manage them through all the uncertainty and anxiety that is associated with COVID. And it was over the course of the 3 weeks, we have seen skyrocketing numbers of utilization compared to what we had forecasted or projected for this time of the year. We're seeing twice the volume of members calling in with not just COVID-related concerns, but also non-COVID-related concerns, which also kind of speaks to the role of what telemedicine is providing during this pandemic. I think, you know, taking a step back from Oscar, I think more globally, people are recognizing not just the value of telemedicine in this pandemic, but as a true modality of healthcare delivery. And for sure, there have been growing trends over the past months and years for folks to kind of embrace this, both largely from like a expanding of access and a convenience play. But I really, really do think that over the course of this crisis, you're also seeing how quality, true quality care can be delivered virtually, which is so important during this time.
Well, yeah. So where do you see telemedicine going when we're on the other side of this? Do you think it will stick around in people's minds as, you know, a modality, like you said, on its own?
I think so. I truly believe we're entering the next frontier of care delivery. And I think what's also really important to recognize is that it's not about telemedicine by itself. I mean, frankly, telemedicine at its core is talking to a physician over the phone. That's been around for a century. It's really about the entirety of virtual care, which includes telemedicine and then all the levels of digital engagement tools that you surround that encounter with, so that you're really able to not just manage someone in a one-time 20-minute interaction, but be able to create a longitudinal relationship with that person and really start to be able to provide the therapeutic relationship that folks are otherwise used to seeing in more of a brick-and-mortar setting. And I really do believe that this is an inflection point for both how telemedicine will be embraced from the clinical community and then the level of adoption that you're going to see from the general public. And I truly believe that Oscar is really well positioned, because it's not just about that requesting a doctor on call, but it's all the other virtual and digital engagement services that we surround that interaction with that really allows us to truly, you know, be a part of our members and patients' clinical lives and be able to manage their care more comprehensively.
And as telemedicine becomes that alternative, the field is now catching up to the increased need. Phil Crowley is an attorney who has been handling legal matters for pharmaceutical, biomedical, and information technologies, and talked to us about some of the legality and regulatory issues behind telemedicine.
Why should physicians limit some medical advice and diagnosis when using telemedicine?
Well, there are a couple of reasons, Caitlin. One is professional liability concerns, where the diagnosis in a particular case requires some kind of physical interaction between the healthcare provider and the patient. Based on standard medical practice, then telemedicine is probably not a good alternative. Also, I had a conversation with some people in my network of insurance agents, And he tells me that many policies do permit telemedicine so long as it is conducted over a HIPAA-compliant platform. So while it might be all right for a physician to engage in telemedicine through a HIPAA-compliant platform, it wouldn't be to use FaceTime or Skype or some of those commercially available mechanisms that are used typically for informal conversations.
And just to cover some more basics, why can't doctors provide information across state lines?
Well, that's an excellent question. The practice of medicine is regulated by the states, and so a physician is licensed by his or her individual state to practice medicine in that state. Fortunately, a number of state licensure boards got together and in 2015 created the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, which is an agreement among cooperating states whereby they agree to recognize physicians and allow physicians to be licensed under their laws where the physician is licensed under the laws of another state. And right now, there are 29 states that provide for this type of licensure. And so when a physician is licensed through this mechanism, they can, in fact, provide medical advice across state lines and presumably in accordance with their professional liability insurance. Unfortunately, at this particular time, it looks like New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut do not have this particular facility in place, although there are 29 other states that do have it in place. New York and New Jersey, it appears, have introduced legislation in their legislatures to become members of this particular compact, but so far as the information I see now, they have not yet passed those laws. But certainly the current COVID-19 epidemic is an incentive to participate in this kind of extension of the ability of physicians to get out and provide medical services to underserved populations and also populations that are subject to a surge in demand.
So why are rules like these significant now, and how are offices and practices adapting during this crisis where we're seeing telemedicine be used more?
Well, I would imagine that as practices find it difficult to deal with the surge in demand and in some cases, the difficulty of obtaining appropriate personal protective equipment for their workers, that using telemedicine to expand the reach of the medical office will be used more. And I think the effect of that over the long term will be that as not only physicians, but also patients become more familiar with telemedicine and more accepting of telemedicine, that there's an opportunity to expand the reach of telemedicine to underserved populations, and then to have medical innovators find ways to deal with those cases where telemedicine in its current rather passive format isn't appropriate for certain diagnostic tests and diagnostic situations.
That kind of is my next question. How do you think this pandemic will change the future of telemedicine? Do you see some of these regulations changing as we see the potential of it?
Well, I think that this will certainly be an incentive for the states that are not yet members of the interstate medical license to join up, and where they have legislation that has been introduced to pass that legislation and make this more of a national practice of medicine. I noticed that there are some really significant states with truly excellent academic institutions where the advice of those physicians would be sought by anyone in the United States. I could certainly see an incentive to have those states join up. And in addition, I think that once there is a push to make telemedicine more accepted by patients, you'll get a lot of innovation by entrepreneurs in the healthcare space to figure out ways where medical services can be delivered without necessarily having the medical or healthcare professional actually present there. I could see a day where some enterprising person puts together a kiosk kind of system that contains within it the type of in-person testing that cannot now be done via telemedicine to provide that capability in a setting where you may have a receptionist or some other who's not trained in the medical arts, allowing people to come in and set up time to engage in an interactive kind of session with a medical professional using tests that can be administered right on the site. So I would look for that kind of innovation to come out of this.
Great. Well, anything else you want to add just about telemedicine during this pandemic?
Well, there's no substitute for the care and attention that healthcare workers provide on the front lines, who are really heroic and courageous people who are exposing themselves to the potential for infection. But telemedicine in its current form, and as I think it will evolve over the coming years, can be a really useful adjunct to the current practice of medicine, and indeed may be used to bend down the cost curve for the delivery of medical services generally. Certainly, it's an alternative for underserved populations that are not being served at all right now, and can be used as a means of helping those people in the near term as well.
This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. If you want to chat or have a question, email us at COVID19daily@radiomd.com. That's COVID19daily@radiomd.com. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'd love to have you back with us. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.